Welcome to Smart Talk. I'm Marie Cusick in for Scott Lamar. Today we're talking about Pennsylvania's nuclear power industry. There's a big debate right now about whether the state should take steps to help the industry. We're going to hear from a lot of different viewpoints, but during the first part of the show, we have two people who think some action should be taken. So in the studio right now with me is Representative Thomas Mahaffey. He's a Republican representing Dauphin County. Thanks for being on the show.
Thank you, Marie.
And on the phone, we have David Fine, who's the Senior Vice President of State Governmental and Regulatory Affairs at Exelon. Hi, David.
Good morning, Marie.
Well, thank you both for coming on. So both of you think that something should happen. Of course, Exelon owns several plants in Pennsylvania, so we'll get into this. But let me start with you, Representative Mahaffey. There was a report that you were part of the state's bipartisan nuclear energy caucus that published a report a couple weeks ago kind of outlining what some of the options are for Pennsylvania. We have two plants of the five plants in the state are set to close prematurely, including Three Mile Island, which is right down the road. So tell me, why did this caucus form, and what is the problem we're facing, and what did you guys look at?
Well, I think it's exactly what you said earlier. I mean, the premature shutdown of TMI and Beaver Valley now has put us in a position where we need to do something, and we need to make sure and see if we should do something. And that's why this caucus was started. It's bipartisan, bicameral. I got to say, the chairs did an excellent job, and staff, of putting this together and going through and having those there to testify and lead us to the right, you know, what is the right option for the General Assembly and what should they do. So at that point, we had testifiers throughout the last 18 months. We put together this report, about 40 pages. I'm sure you've read it and had that opportunity. And we looked at that and said, okay, now we can act. You know, a lot of times what happens with the General Assembly is we sort of kind of put things together and we don't have all what we need to do, you know, kind of reactionary. This isn't. This is something that's huge for not only this area, but the state and probably the nation in general. So doing this and putting it together just gave us the options. And I think the four options that are in there really give us a roundabout way of what we can do at the General Assembly to fix this problem.
Okay. And we'll get to those four options in a moment. But David, let me just ask you, Three Mile Island is set to close in September 2019, unless there's some kind of help or support. Can you just explain what the problem is and what exactly you guys are asking for from the state?
Sure. Well, the problem, and I think the Nuclear Energy Caucus report addressed that. The problem is that we've had some long-standing energy market flaws. This is not a problem that's unique to Pennsylvania. Other states, New York, Illinois, New Jersey, have all faced the same question. Their policymakers have stepped up to create flaws in the wholesale energy market. There has not been activity in the U.S. Congress. There has not been anything done by the regional transmission organization, PJM. And states are doing what states do best, and that is take care of their own interests and have developed policies that recognize the contribution that the nuclear plants make from an environmental perspective, and have adopted policies that provide a value for the carbon-free nature of these plants, for the reliability benefits of these plants, and recognize that these are important assets to the state from a jobs, economic, environmental, and reliability and security standpoint, and has taken action.
Okay, and in the report lays out four different options for Pennsylvania. So the first one is essentially do nothing and allow these plants to close prematurely. Number two and three are sort of some combination of modifying our alternative energy portfolio standard, which is a 2004 law that requires utilities to purchase a certain amount of their power from clean sources, or creating what are known as zero emission credits, ZECs, which other states have done to recognize nuclear as a source of carbon-free power. And the fourth option, which the report calls the best long-term solution, is putting a price on carbon in Pennsylvania. So I guess, Representative Mahaffey, you've been part of this process. What do you think of those four, what the state ought to be doing?
Well, option number one is definitely not an option. That would cause us, and I think at the end of the day, you have to realize what the cost factor is to the consumer and what is best for the consumer. So number one, when we went in and we studied this, is probably one of the highest cost factors by doing nothing, because the price of gas would go up. You know what I mean? As far as,
the price
of electricity go up, because we can't always rely on gas being as cheap as what it is today. And I think we've seen that through not only the Brattle Report, but also Penn State and others. So at that point, we have to really look at that. So that is, to me, is not an option. As far as the zero emission credit, it is an option. It's been done in other states. It can be a little bit complicated. So we have to really look at, is that what we want to model? And of course, it goes back to what is the cost. And then we have, of course, the Alternative Energy Portfolio Standard Act. That definitely is something that we enacted in Pennsylvania that's special to Pennsylvania. And that's something I think that we can look at those tiers and maybe come up with something that would help save these plants. And then the very last one is the carbon pricing. And that is something that other states or the federal government has been looking at through REGI and others. But we also are unique in that area.
And REGI is the Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative.
Thank you. Yeah. So we have to be careful if we implement something like that, because a lot of our electricity and what we found out through this report is definitely exported to other states. So we do a lot of that. You know, we produce a lot of energy here in Pennsylvania that goes to other states. So those are the kind of three things. But at the end of the day, what is best for the consumer and what is going to be most reliable for the consumer?
And could you just tell me a little bit about your personal journey on this? You know, this caucus formed about 2 years ago. You had a lot of hearings. You've issued this report now. Some of the initial concerns from local lawmakers were about the local job losses and the economic impact of this region about Three Mile Island closing early. Is that still your top concern, or are there other concerns that you have now about these plants closing?
No, I think number one concern are the jobs. I mean, if you look at my district that I represent, you can see the amount of people that work at TMI or are connected with TMI in some way. It doesn't mean they generally work for Exelon, but they work for Exelon. So, I mean, that is super important. We also have to look at what the benefits are. And this is one thing that was pointed out is environmental. And what's going to happen? And you know, as a it produces 93%. You know, the nuclear fleet here in Pennsylvania is 93% of the energy produced is emission free. So those are the things we have to really look into and make sure. But it's the economic impact to the whole, to any area that has one of these plants. If you take Vermont Yankee that shut down and you see the problems that they're having there right now.
That was up in New England, yeah.
Yes,
yeah.
Exactly. And that right there should show all of us that we need to do something. We need to make sure these plants stay open.
Okay, well, we welcome your questions and comments. You can call us at 1-800-729-7532 or send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. You can also leave a question or a comment on WITF's Facebook page. On Twitter, we are at smarttalkwitf. Again, the phone number is 1-800-729-7532. David, I want to ask you, it's my understanding, there has not been a specific bill put forward yet, but have the three companies operating in Pennsylvania, including Exelon, have they come to a consensus about sort of what they want or what are you asking for specifically?
Yeah, so a lot of stakeholders, you know, have been talking for a while. I think the issuance of the Nuclear Energy Caucus report is sort of crystallize a number of different options that people have been talking about for, you know, a couple of years now. And now is really the time for hopefully stakeholders, members of the legislature, governor's office, all sort of come together on, you know, what are the options, what are the things that we can do, because time is not our friend here. I want to pick up on something that the representative talked about, the environmental impact. Think about this. TMI itself produces more zero carbon energy than all of the renewable energy that exists in the Commonwealth. So the billions of dollars that have been spent on growing that industry and addressing the release of harmful carbon dioxide and other pollutants would be wiped out overnight. All of that investment from a carbon abatement standpoint would be wiped out overnight with the retirement of the TMI unit. And obviously, that's a very important and serious consideration. And a lot of people are focusing on the environmental aspect, and it's significant. You factor in the Beaver Valley units that are scheduled to retire a couple years following. Obviously, this picture gets a lot worse. And so we're hopeful that when we look at the policies that exist on the books, the fact that the Commonwealth recognizes 16 other technologies as renewable or carbon-free under the existing statute, that there can be room for something like the source that provides 93% of the marketplace while we work on a longer-term solution, a solution about addressing carbon. And maybe there is a longer-term solution on pricing carbon into the market, either by joining RGGI, as was mentioned, or by the state having some type of program, or maybe PJM could do and show some leadership here. They have talked about the ability to design their market to address carbon pricing. They have proposed a white paper on that a couple years ago. We haven't seen any action on that since, but I think there is a renewed focus on that, and we welcome that discussion.
Okay, and I'll just say PJM is the regional grid operator for this region. But we are going to hear in the later in the show about some critics who don't think the state needs to step in and do something. But I do have a listener email. This is from Thomas. He emails, this is the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, not the United Socialist State of Pennsylvania. If companies come in, drive an operation into the ground, then they should just fail. Representative Mahaffey, what do you say about this sort of free market, you can't compete?
I'd have to disagree with that, of course. When you look at this, we have an opportunity here. And one thing we have to always remember is we need a diversified platform of energy, or portfolio of energy, whatever you'd like to call it. And that does drive the market. And you're right. So let's say the nuclear power plants close down. Okay. Right now, gas is number one. I mean, gas would come in. So why would you ever have a monopoly of energy resource or energy creators out there? You don't want that either as a consumer. You know, that would be like saying, okay, well, let's have Walmart be the only place you can shop in Pennsylvania. You know, there is something to say about competition. That's true. But at this point, this is something that we all use, that we all have to make sure that the grid is resilient. We have to make sure, and if you look back at other things that have happened, whether it be back in 2014 or just currently a year ago, how cold we've had it, you know, the polar vortex and other things that have transpired. At that point in time, we realized that nuclear power was really the power base that was there for us as consumers to make sure that, you know, we have electricity in these times when it's extremely cold or extremely hot, and they are reliable. And we know that. We know that we've studied that. We see that. They don't shut down. They don't rely on anything else other than once every 2 years, they shut down for refueling purposes. So when you get those baseload plants going, they produce energy. That's what they do for anywhere between 18 to 24 months. The one thing I can say about this is we learned something back when the stock market crashed. At that point in time in 2008, we learned that we need to diversify our portfolios, right? For our retirement programs. This is no different. It's the same thing. And that's why I think, you know, you can't look at this like, oh, well, if you can't compete, you got to go. Because I don't think that's good for the consumers at all.
All right. I want to go to the phones. We have a phone call from Vince in Lebanon. Vince, you're on the air.
Yes. Good morning. Hi.
Hi.
I just have a comment or two, and you can discuss it. But my comment is, didn't we just bail out GM and what happened there? It seems like every other year, every third year, we hear about TMI and some financial situations. Did we actually forget about the TMI accident and what problems that caused? Isn't that to be considered? And also, I just like to say, what's happening with the spent fuel, and what system did we develop to safely dispose of that fuel? Other fuel sources don't have that issue. And thank you, and I'll hang up now. I appreciate your time.
Yeah, David, do you want to address that? A lot of people have issues with labeling nuclear power clean.
Sure. Well, the issue on spent fuel is an unfortunate one, but it's an unfortunate one that isn't really the industry's fault. It's a responsibility that the federal government has taken to take and dispose of the nuclear waste. And unfortunately, there's a lot of reasons why the federal government hasn't moved forward with the repository. But make no mistake, the safety issues surrounding spent fuel and the way in which it is stored safely on site is without question. The gentleman who referred to things in the past, I think that's the past, and those are sort of the scare tactics you hear people say about the industry who just are not as versed in where the industry has come. If you think about that, the safety record of the nuclear industry over the last 40 years is unparalleled in this country. And the amount of rigor that these plants go through, the oversight from the Nuclear Regulatory Commission is really not an issue. If you have the opportunity to see a plant and to see the operation there, both from a security and safety standpoint, that's job one. Job one is safely operating those stations, and our company has an excellent track record of that, and we're very proud of that. The issue regarding the economics of TMI is pretty well documented. There's really no debate about that. Even the PJM independent market monitor, who reviews those things on a confidential basis, agrees that the financial challenges there at the station.
So is there a bill forthcoming? Is something going to be happening this spring? What can you tell us about that, Representative?
Well, yeah, absolutely. There will be a bill out. At this point in time, we're working together with industry partners and looking at what we can do and what is best. And when I say this, it's not just the industry itself, it's industry partners, the environmental, everybody, and looking at that and seeing what is going to be the best for the consumer and what's going to be best for all of us to make sure that we have good pricing, to make sure that we have stability, to make sure we have reliability. All those things play into this. So we are working on that right now. I don't want to say there's a bill completely finished or written, but it is in place at this point.
Do you think that given all the various constituencies that have to, would want to get on board with this, that there will be sort of a more holistic look at energy rather than if there is a bill or some kind of legislative action taken, that it won't be just about nuclear power? Because in other states, they have amended their renewable portfolio standards, set higher renewable energy targets. I know environmental advocates would like to see our renewable targets set higher. That law is a 2004 law, they say, is outdated. Do you think something bigger would happen, perhaps with that or energy efficiency measures, or do you see this being solely about nuclear plants?
No, I think it has the benefit for the environmental side is here. We see that right now. I mean, if you take, like David said, you take that out of play. I mean, we just TMI alone and the amount of emissions that we lose, emissions-free that we lose at that time is extremely important. So I think the environmental side does see, and as talking to them, I mean, I'm sure they want more solar and wind and hydro and so forth. And I agree there's place for all of this. But that comes down to a diversified grid and making sure that goes on. So it's always a moving target. You always look at legislation and where you can do better with it. So we'll start with what we have in front of us, and then we'll see how it progresses.
David, do you think the carbon-free emission argument, the climate argument, is going to win over folks in Pennsylvania? I know Governor Tom Wolf said just last week that he takes climate change really seriously, and he thinks it's one of the big issues he has to deal with in his second term. But just knowing the makeup of the General Assembly, do you think that sort of carbon-free emissions, greenhouse gas issues are going to rise to the top here, or what will?
Well, I think you can't avoid the issue. I mean, it's a real issue. You've seen a growing number of organizations talk about that. You've seen organizations like the Union of Concerned Scientists talk about that and talk about the role that nuclear power plays in addressing that, and that without it, we have no chance to address the real damage that's being done from climate change. So I think, it is certainly an issue that resonates with a great number of people. It certainly does with the public. And it is something that has to be part of the consideration as you're thinking about fashioning energy policies, to your point about maybe broader other energy policies being at play. I have no doubt that other stakeholders want other energy policy issues to be part of the mix, to be addressed. And we've seen ongoing debate on some of those policies over the last couple of years, not a lot of movement, but issues on energy efficiency and carbon and what are we doing on renewables and so forth. Yeah, we have no doubt that other parties will be wanting the Commonwealth to consider other issues either on their own or as part of a comprehensive review of energy policy. That's a healthy debate and discussion. We hope to be a big part of that discussion.
Okay, I want to wrap up soon, but I want to take one more phone call from a listener right now. We have Larry in Lancaster on the phone. Larry, you're on the air.
Hello?
Hi, can you hear us?
Thank you for taking my call. My question is, who is paying for the storage of the waste currently, and if the waste were moved to the storage facility in Nevada, who would be paying for it then? It seems to me if federal government is paying for it, then the taxpayers are subsidizing nuclear industry already.
Okay, David, do you want to answer that?
Sure. Electric ratepayers have paid to help fund that facility. That's why the federal government needs to own up to its obligation. There is a court decree that says they need to follow through on that, and that's their obligation. So the funds have been collected to do that. Nuclear operators do not charge customers for continued funding of that operation currently right now. Obviously, the plant's all in Pennsylvania, are out in the competitive market. They don't have a rate base. They don't have customers that they can charge that to. So the customers have paid for that. That's the bargain that they made. And that was the arrangement that the industry made with the federal government, and the federal government made with the industry. So again, hopefully there can be renewed progress on a long-term site. Otherwise, the storage on-site is something that the operators themselves have to factor into their cost of operation.
Okay, and coming up next, we're going to hear from some critics of plans to support nuclear plants. But first, I want to thank Representative Thomas Mahaffey, a Republican of Dauphin County, for being on the show.
Oh, thank you very much for having me.
And David Fine, Senior Vice President for State Governmental Affairs at Exelon. Thank you.
Thank you, Marie.
You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF. I'm Marie Cusick. On Monday's Smart Talk, we'll be discussing antiques and collectibles with David Cordier of Cordier Auctions and Appraisals. So if you have an item you'd like to be appraised from a long distance, you can send a brief description and a photograph to smarttalk@witf.org by Monday morning. So for the second half of the show, we're still talking about Pennsylvania's nuclear power plants and what should be done or not done to save them. In the second half of the show, we have some critics of ideas to support these plants. Joining me in the studio is Mark Gibas, a senior attorney on climate and clean energy at the Natural Resources Defense Council. Hi, Mark.
Morning, Mary.
And Stephanie Wissman, the executive director of the Associated Petroleum Industries of Pennsylvania. Hi, Stephanie.
Good morning, Marie. Thanks for having me.
And Glenn Thomas, president of GT Power Group. He's a former Pennsylvania Public Utility Commissioner. Hi, Glenn.
Good morning.
Okay, so we heard in the first part of the show why these plants need to be rescued and need some kind of support for the state. Apparently, there is a bill forthcoming. Stephanie, let me start with you. Why is that not something we should do?
The way we view it, Marie, is that when you have unprecedented government intervention in the energy markets to prop up high-cost facilities, that really is going to create an unlevel playing field in the energy space. So we always get concerned if there's a talk within government about creating winners and losers in the energy space, because we feel we need to all fuel sources need to be competing on a level playing field.
And Glenn, you run your own consulting firm now, and a lot of what you do specializes in competitive electricity market issues. So do we have a competitive market now?
Absolutely. And Pennsylvania made the decision way back in 1996 to restructure our electricity markets. And since then, we've seen tremendous successes. I mean, Pennsylvania used to have electricity rates that were 15 to 20% above the national average. Now our rates are below the national average. We've seen unprecedented investments in this state. We've seen over 2 million people actively shop for their power. And as a result, Pennsylvanians have saved billions and billions of dollars as a result of electric competition. And that's something we all should be very proud of and not want to throw away.
And Mark, I know the environmental community isn't necessarily uniformly around this issue, but where do you stand from the Natural Resources Defense Council? What's your viewpoint on all this?
Well, I want to make a couple points in response to what Stephanie and Glenn just said. One is that having markets is not the same thing as having policy. The markets are competitive to a point, but they're also flawed, mainly because they don't price carbon pollution. That's a huge flaw in PJM's markets. And if you're talking about subsidies and government assistance to resources, there's never been a time in this country when the government hasn't subsidized resources. We continue to do that. We continue to subsidize fossil fuels more than any other resources. So the question is, what kind of energy policy we want? How do we change the markets to shape that outcome? And if we can't change the markets, what else do we do on the state level? And in Pennsylvania, we have the Competition Act that Mr. Thomas referred to. We have the Alternative Energy Portfolio Standard, that is the state's sort of last entry into shaping its energy mix. But that statute is 2004. It's very weak for renewables, and we need to revisit that.
Given that if there's a bill forthcoming or some kind of legislative movement this spring on this issue, it seems like there will be more than just nuclear in there. It could be changing the Alternative Energy Portfolio Standard, energy efficiency measures. I mean, I guess, how do you guys see this shaking out?
Well, I mean, I think the first place to start is to have an honest dialogue about what's going on in this state. And, you know, I appreciate the work that the Nuclear Energy Caucus did, but a lot of their work was based on 2016 numbers. And 2016, we had the lowest energy prices in the history of PJM's grid. Prices have since rebounded. And there's actually publicly available data out there that shows Pennsylvania's nuclear power plants, with the exception of Three Mile Island, are going to be wildly profitable in 2018, making upwards of $150 to $200 million. So I think we got to start with, you know, maybe an update already to a report that was just recently issued that reflects actually what's happening in 2018, not 2016, because those numbers are flawed and paint a very skewed picture of actually the state of the nuclear energy industry in Pennsylvania.
Yeah, Marie, if I could weigh in a little bit on the Nuclear Energy Caucus report that was just released a couple of weeks ago. You know, we were very disappointed to see the singular view that the caucus did take in that report. Unfortunately, it relied primarily on the testimony of the nuclear industry, studies that were commissioned by the nuclear industry, and really left out the ratepayers, consumer groups, state and federal regulators, as well as the independent power generators that really should all have a voice in this discussion. And they weren't asked throughout the entire process for their thoughts and their expertise in this area.
NRDC was also critical of the report because it paid such short shrift to renewables and efficiency. The question for Pennsylvania now is really, what should we be investing in? We're in the plight we are right now with respect to very little renewables and a lot of low-carbon nuclear potentially going offline because we haven't sort of made the smart policy decisions that we should have years ago. So if we're thinking about the future, we have to think about how do we transition from the current energy sector we have to one that is lower carbon and lower cost. And renewables and efficiency are the best way to do that.
And if I could on that point, because I think it's an important one, I think you can have environmental policy and environmental goals that are very consistent with the Competition Act in Pennsylvania. I mean, we've incorporated enormous amounts of environmental regulation within this competitive marketplace. We've regulated NOx, SOx, mercury, ozone. I'm probably missing a couple other ones, but it's very possible to set up, you know, regulatory structures that achieve these environmental goals that are consistent with these market-based goals as well. I would argue that what's been set up in other states do not accomplish that, but there's ways to get it done and achieve all these goals.
And I agree with that. I mean, there's no questioning the power of markets to achieve environmental solutions. If you grew up in Pennsylvania in the 70s and 80s, as I did, you remember acid rain.
Right.
That was a huge problem from coal-fired power plants. We solved that through a market-based solution adopted by the federal government under George H.W. Bush. We haven't taken that approach with carbon pollution. We should.
And just if I could, one more point on that. We solved that acid rain problem not by paying the non-emitters of sulfur, right? We didn't pay gas plants to not produce sulfur. We regulated sulfur dioxide in that case.
Okay, and I want to go to the phones. We have a phone call from Les in Harrisburg. Les, you're on the air.
Good morning.
Hi.
I just turned on the radio, and I heard you're talking about nuclear energy. And I just recently saw something about Bill Gates is involved with a program for nuclear power plants that use nuclear waste, already generated nuclear waste, as a fuel. Do you know anything about that, please?
Anybody? Okay. Very specific question, but I'm not sure what Bill Gates is doing around that. But I guess more generally, though, we do have this waste issue, and people say nuclear energy should not be considered clean. There's really no plan in this country for what to do with the waste, and these plants were never meant to be long-term storage facilities, and that's what they've become.
I think that's right. NRDC agrees that nuclear is neither renewable nor clean. I don't understand what Bill Gates is doing with nuclear, but nobody is really building new nuclear plants in the U.S. today. There are two under construction, one in Georgia, one in South Carolina. They're both billions of dollars over cost. Absent some major technological breakthrough in nuclear power, and with renewables continually coming down in cost, it just doesn't make economic sense to build nuclear plants in the future. Solar and wind, their cost has decreased both by over 80% in the last 10 years. It continues to come down, so those are the future.
One part of this story is the surge of natural gas production, and natural gas has been taking a greater share of electric power generation. So, you know, one of the arguments for natural gas is that it's been displacing dirtier coal-fired power plants. But if it's undercutting nuclear plants, is that hurting us from a climate perspective?
Yeah, I wouldn't use the word undercutting here, but what I would say is that within the confines of a competitive energy marketplace, because of the environmental benefits, the reliability and affordability of the natural gas industry, natural gas generation, we've been able to earn our place in the market for generation, for natural gas generation, and we're going to continue to provide low-cost, reliable fuel and lower cost to consumers. So we have earned every bit of our market share within the competitive marketplace.
Yeah, and if I could just add to that, in the last 10 years, 13 new natural gas power plants have been built in Pennsylvania, $8 billion of investment, employing countless Pennsylvanians. And there's a big difference between what's going on in Pennsylvania with the construction of these new facilities versus what's going on in South Carolina and Georgia, where all those costs, and it's billions and billions of dollars of costs, are going to be put on the backs of consumers through a regulatory model that does that. In Pennsylvania, all that capital is at risk. That's on the risk of the investors that consumers are eventually going to benefit from.
Okay, well, we welcome your questions and comments in this discussion. You can call us at 1-800-729-7532 or send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. You can also leave a question or a comment on WITF's Facebook page. On Twitter, we are at smarttalkwitf. Again, the phone number is 1-800-729-7532. You're listening to Smart Talk. I'm Marie Cusick. Coming up on Monday's Smart Talk, we'll be discussing antiques and collectibles with David Cordier of Cordier Auctions and Appraisals. So if you have an item you'd like to be appraised from a long distance, you can send a brief description and maybe a photograph to smarttalk@witf.org by Monday morning, please. So getting back to our discussion, we are talking about Pennsylvania's nuclear power plants and whether they need some kind of bailout or support from the state. Looks like there will be some sort of bill forthcoming in the spring or early 2019. So we're talking right now with some critics of nuclear bailouts, Mark Zibas of the Natural Resources Defense Council, Stephanie Wissman of the Associated Petroleum Industries of Pennsylvania, and Glenn Thomas of GT Power Group. We touched on this a little bit, but I just want to ask you all, what would be the effect on ratepayers to some kind of bailout or support of the plants?
there will be a very large impact, Marie, on the ratepayers. And if all you have to do is take a look at three states that have decided to bail out these uneconomic nuclear plants in Illinois, New York, and most recently New Jersey earlier this year. So the ZEC programs is what the nuclear industry has gone after, sought after, was able to secure.
Zero emission credits.
Thank you. Zero emissions credits. And what that means, for every electron of energy that is produced by the nuclear industry, they will be paid for that, a zero emissions credit, paid for by the ratepayers. This is not a traditional government bailout. This will be paid for by ratepayers on their energy bills. To the tune of, in New Jersey, $300 million per year is the estimated cost to ratepayers. Taking a look at Illinois, $2.3 billion over 10 years. In New York, $7 billion over 12 years. So there is a tremendous cost to the ratepayers. And unfortunately, in the Nuclear Energy Caucus report, they don't talk about that. They talk about the three states and what they did to assist the nuclear industry, but they didn't talk about the tremendous cost that the ratepayers are left holding the bag with. So you really need to take a look at that. And also in the Nuclear Energy Report, it doesn't talk about New Jersey's plan that actually allows out-of-state facilities to apply for the zero emissions credits in that state. So when you look at the options that are outlined in the Nuclear Caucus report, you have to wonder, that was conspicuously absent, that really should be one of the options there. It's like there's nothing precluding these facilities from applying for those ZECs in New Jersey.
Marie, one thing I want to point out is that people don't pay rates, electricity rates, they pay electricity bills. And there's an important difference. An electricity rate is the dollar amount per kilowatt hour of electricity. But the amount that you pay for your bill depends on how much you use. And I bring up that distinction because if we expand our efficiency in using energy, we can drastically lower our energy bills regardless of how much the rate is. But to kind of bring the question back to sort of investment in consumers, energy and electricity specifically, it's not a consumer good like Coke or Pepsi. You know, energy has consequences. And some of those consequences are long-term impacts that we will pay for now or we will pay for later. In terms of climate change, the longer we delay putting prices on these carbon pollution externalities, the harder it's going to be for our children and grandchildren.
Yeah, and Pennsylvanians, I would argue, are actually responding to that and actually treating electricity a little bit more like Coke and Pepsi because we have a choice. I mean, you know, go on to PAPowerSwitch.com, put in your zip code. I did it last night. I can lock in 100% renewable energy for an entire year at less than what my utility is charging me. So I can save money and go 100% renewable if I want to do that. And we're seeing Pennsylvania's homes, businesses, and municipalities doing that across the state. I mean, people are saving money. They're choosing where they're going to get their power from. And as a result, making some of those very, you know, environmental decisions in some cases, if they choose to do that. Some go other options, but there's that ability in Pennsylvania to do that.
Yeah, Mark, you brought up energy efficiency. I mean, it seems like a non-controversial idea to be more efficient and not waste resources. Do you see that changing at all? Is there consensus around strengthening energy efficiency measures?
Well, I hope that there will be. I mean, I think Pennsylvania's Energy Efficiency Statute, Act 129, dates from 2008. Again, like the AEPS, it's a relatively weak bill. There are a lot of states around Pennsylvania that are achieving a lot more savings than we are. We rank about 18th, you know, by the American Council for Energy Efficiency Economy. So we can do a lot more. I think that people who are in the business of selling energy don't necessarily want us to use less. They're looking to expand their markets. The more energy we save, the less energy they sell. But it's in the interest of everyday Pennsylvanians to use less.
Should we be using less?
Consumers should be in the driver's seat, right? I mean, consumers who pay the bills, you know, can make those decisions and make those investments if they so choose to. If I want to redo all the light bulbs in my house, I can do that. If I want to be a business and install different equipment, I can do that. I mean, if the economic incentives are set up the right way, and we've largely done that in Pennsylvania, and we have seen investments. I mean, some of them have been mandated, but most of the investments that are occurring in Pennsylvania are because consumers are making that election on their own, not because some state policy is telling them they have to.
And sometimes consumers don't make the right choices. I was in Philadelphia over the summer and went to a cafe It was about a 90-degree day. The door was wide open with the air conditioning cranked at 65 degrees inside. Now, why was that? You could say, well, it's because we're paying too little for our electricity. We're not pricing the impact of carbon, and so the right incentives aren't in place. So I agree we need to sort of revisit the markets, but we need to sort of figure out how do we limit carbon pollution, and pricing the carbon in the markets is one way of doing that.
It seems like there is consensus among economists that if we want to deal with climate change, some kind of price on carbon is what we need to do, but that just does not seem remotely politically feasible at all. I mean, I think, was it Washington State this past fall had a carbon tax on the ballot and voters rejected it there. PJM has said, the regional grid operator has said that if the state's long-term policy goals are to address climate change and reduce greenhouse gas emissions, they would rather see a price on carbon than these sort of, you know, one-off different things the states have chosen to do.
Yeah, we don't have, from API's perspective, we don't have a position on carbon pricing. We watch any kind of proposals that pop up, and we'll take them on a case-by-case basis. So we're not in a position today to support or oppose any particular proposal that's out there. But one thing I'd like to point out that I think is often overlooked with the natural gas industry is its environmental benefits, specifically cleaner air. When you take a look at the statistics that are there, it is because of natural gas generation is that we as a country are at all-time lows with carbon emissions reductions, 30-year lows, as a matter of fact, in the energy generation space. And when you look economy-wide, we're at 25-year lows. So I'd like to say that natural gas is absolutely a clean alternative to other fuel sources that are out there today.
Yeah, the environmental progress over the last 20 years since we introduced competition in Pennsylvania has been remarkable. I mean, we've seen enormous reductions in NOx and SOx and carbon. And Mark's going to argue we should go further. And, you know that's the nature of environmental policy, always to make the environment better. But I think, as Stephanie points out, it's important to note and appreciate the enormous progress that has been made to date. I mean, Pennsylvania is largely on track to make, and probably will make, its clean power plant targets, you know, without having any of these, mandate-driven systems enforcing it.
Yeah, and I have to go ahead and argue, as Glenn said I would, that we're not going far enough. I mean, because one thing, in 2005, Pennsylvania generated more than half of its electricity from coal. That's decreased by sixfold. Natural gas generation has increased by sixfold at the same time. And yes, a new cutting-edge combined cycle natural gas plant burns much more cleanly than an old coal plant. But, if you're smoking 8 cigarettes a day, it's better than 20, but you're still smoking, right? And we're making these big investments that will be around for a long time and continue to emit more carbon than we should. So again, I think we have to think about what we're investing in, and right now we're not making the energy transition that we need to be making.
I'm sure you've all seen the pretty dire report from the UN that came out in October, and then we had the National Climate Assessment Report recently. And you look at these graphs of where the world needs to be with carbon emissions, and it's like it needs to be going sharply down very soon. So what would you say, like, to the argument that these nuclear plants, just at least in the short term, if we were allowing them to fail, that we would not be able to effectively address climate change?
Well, I'll take issue with the allowing to fail. I mean, okay. These are plants that combined are going to make $640 million this year. I take issue with the fact that these plants are actually, in the economic distress that they've been purported to be in. There's Three Mile Island being the exception. Three Mile Island has some very unique issues associated with it. Yes, that plant is financially struggling. But based on all the other public available data, these nuclear plants in Pennsylvania aren't going anywhere.
Yeah, and I know Eric Epson, who is a frequent critic of the nuclear industry, he's basically called this a winnowing of the nuclear herd, and he said that the nuclear industry is not going anywhere.
And there truly is a distinction there, too, that I think folks need to be mindful of, is that are they truly unprofitable or not profitable enough? And that's what we're looking at here, because clearly the nuclear industry is profitable. Maybe they are not meeting their targets internally that they've set. But we really need to be mindful of the fact that this was a corporate boardroom decision regarding Three Mile Island that has been thrust upon the legislature. And I would like for people to think about that for a little bit.
Okay, I want to go to the phones again. We have a phone call from Pat in Waynesboro. Pat, you're on the air.
Good morning.
Hi.
In 1979, when President Carter was elected, he did what I call a hinge of history. There were solar panels on the White House, and that hinge of history then came in with Ronald Reagan, who took them off to be supposedly looked after and never put them back up. Just think where we would be today if we had gone down that path with solar energy back in the early 80s.
Okay, thank you very much. Thanks for that comment. I guess, you know, to that point, what would you all say about the leadership from the federal government on clean energy?
Well, that's been deeply lacking, I think, under the Trump administration, as we've seen. We've seen continual rollbacks of environmental policies that the Obama administration put into place, which are taking us exactly in the wrong direction. That's one of the reasons it's so important for states to step up now. And we're definitely looking to Governor Wolf and the General Assembly in the next 4 years to take some really progressive actions on climate policy. Back to the sort of question of like state assistance on nuclear, there's one thing that NRDC likes about nuclear plants, and that is they generate lots of electricity with low carbon. But we don't like the fact they generate radioactive waste. We don't like the safety concerns they present. They're neither renewable nor clean. But the way we think about state action is that if states are going to look into supporting nuclear plants, they need to think about capping carbon, expanding efficiency in renewables, taking worker impacts into effect, taking consumer impacts into effect, but most of all, not repeating the mistakes of the past. And again, Pennsylvania's big mistake is not having invested in clean energy when we had a chance 2 years ago.
And if I could just respond to the caller's comment about solar power, because I think there's a story about solar in Pennsylvania that's largely not known. 10 years ago, we had 3 megawatts of solar in the PJM queue in Pennsylvania. Today, we have over 2,800 megawatts of solar in the PJM queue in Pennsylvania. And not all those projects in the queue get built. But I think it's a pretty good indication of the interest and activity in and around solar. And, you know, as Mark pointed out earlier, the price of solar has plummeted in recent years. I mean, there's grid-scale projects coming in some western states at 2 and 3 cents. You know, just to give you an idea, the fall prices in Pennsylvania are at 6 cents. So, you know, solar is becoming increasingly competitive, you know, competing with Stephanie's members, and you know that consumers are going to drive, you know, where the demand and where these projects are going to get built. So I think it's important to recognize just the tremendous progress that's been made on the solar side.
And I agree. And I heard Secretary McDonald from the DEP on this program yesterday talking about the DEP's Finding Pennsylvania Solar Future report, which, to sort of Glenn's point, lays out a series of recommendations on how Pennsylvania can get to 10% solar generation by 2030. So we know how to do this. The costs continue to come down. The more we invest, the more we'll have economies of scale and the costs will come down even more.
Okay, and we have just a couple minutes left. So from each of you, you know, what do you see happening in 2019 or what would you like to happen around this? Very briefly.
I guess time will tell to see exactly, you know, what will happen with this issue. It wouldn't surprise me if a more comprehensive energy discussion is had. So we're going to be monitoring that extremely closely and to make sure that folks don't lose sight of what natural gas, what their attributes are, and what we brought to the process so far.
My comment would be Pennsylvania should be smart. I mean, there's ways to do this. We've addressed environmental challenges in the past. There's ways to have environmental progress. There's ways to have energy policy. What I've seen in other states, really, I've seen really some bad public policies out of other states. I would hope that Pennsylvania would be smarter.
Yeah, let's invest in renewables and in efficiency. Let's recognize the difference between markets and policy and recognize that even though we have markets, policy has a role in shaping the state's generation mix.
All right. I want to thank all of our guests today talking about nuclear power in Pennsylvania. Mark Gibas of the Natural Resources Defense Council, Stephanie Caterino-Wissman of the Associated Petroleum Industries of Pennsylvania, and Glenn Thomas, president of GT Power Group. Thank you all for being on the program.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And again, Monday on Smart Talk, we will be discussing antiques and collectibles with David Cordier of Cordier Auctions and Appraisals. So if you have an item you'd like to be appraised from a long distance, send a brief description and a photograph to smarttalk@witf.org by Monday morning.